Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Leering Onlooker Sachs. You had several copies of this in the old second draft deck in the Arena Open, huh?
Yes, I did. I ended up with three of them. Spoiler alert for folks who haven't checked out my my YouTube run. It was shortcut. I was cut to the quick et tu Brute by dear friend Stunlock FTW Matt. Knocked me out. But silver lining is that he got the 1K in the tournament. But yeah, ended up with three of them. I was happy to hear that you said you felt like you would have navigated similarly, because that was a tough draft. Started out with Aurelia, which feels really nice. And then I think I made the correct move to move off of red-white, which was cut to shreds.
Yeah, the draft was very difficult. I think you had a super heart seat. I think we talked about it. The only pick I would have made differently was your pack two, pick one. You took Detective Satchel, which later in the draft you kind of acknowledged. That wasn't a great pick. I think if you take Loxodon Eavesdropper there, you still also have your draft gets even more interesting, because I think you still have outs to be more green-red splash Aurelia if you take the Eavesdropper there as opposed to going green-black. But your green-black deck ended up really coming together, too, with that pack three, pick seven chalk outline.
Yeah.
It was a cool draft. I also made the second draft. I foiled my first draft and record for the YouTube. Sorry, YouTube folks.
Sad.
YouTube.com/@LordsOfLimited. There it is. But yeah, my second draft was a lot less good. I think I drafted fine. I ended up heavy red. I was trying to feel out what second color I should pair with red the whole time. I ended up going with green. But my draft started with a War Leader's Call. Perimeter Inspector, Perimeter Enforcer, is what the 1-1 flying lifelink thing into the red-white enchantment, into like red-white not really being open. It was kind of a similar thing.
You got past the red-white enchantment?
It did, yeah. Pack one, pick two.
What is it like?
It felt good, but then I got pushed off it, same as you. Yeah. I mean, I navigated heavy red. But then I got the red green 4/4 rare, the Morph Lord.
Yaris.
Yeah. Had that. It was very good for me. I ended up red green morphs, essentially. Some super, super close games. I also 1-2'd for no cash money. Can't close here at Lords of the Limited.
We can't close. We are not closers. Coffee's for closers, and we're not getting any because we're here on a Thursday night, Ben. I feel like this episode's going to be a little loopy. I can just feel the energy is a little wild. It's a little Lords Limited after hours happening here. And honestly, I thought about this when the meat of our episode is going to be about this article, Nuts and Bolts number 16, which is sort of peeling back the curtain a little bit about the shift at Common largely from draft boosters to play boosters. I thought about doing maybe we just do this as a YouTube video, right? Like you and I hop on a call, do it as a little more free form, throw it up on the YouTube channel. But I think this bears enough weight, or there's enough meat on this bone for this to just be a full-fledged podcast episode and get it out to our entire audience. Because I think I think this is just a lot of cool stuff to talk about in this article. But two, a lot of people who are invested in draft don't know a lot of the things. Like, you know, the thing about there being a common of every color, I feel like anytime you or I say that on a YouTube video, or said that, sorry, rest in peace, draft boosters, said that in a YouTube video, we'd at least get one comment of someone being like, wait, how did you know a white card was missing? Is there a common of every color?
Secret tech? Do you have the WotC hookup?
Right. So there's a lot of stuff like that. I mean, that is no longer the case, but I feel like the people who are entrenched don't maybe know that sort of the mechanics there of what make up a booster. And now we're really getting to see like specifics of what R&D is thinking about in terms of the slots for commons and the shifts that they've made with regards to play boosters. So that's going to be the bulk of what we talk about today.
Yeah, looking forward to chatting with you about it.
So let's do a few housekeeping things. First things first is the Patreon page, patreon.com/LordsOfLimited, is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. The show will always be free, of course, but we have a lot of great perks over at the Patreon page base level. Everybody who gives back gets access to the Lords of Limited Discord. It's my favorite. I'm just like completely glued in to Discord. It's on my desktop. I'm seeing there's like, I have some notification in Discord right now on my desktop, and it's like every fiber of my body wants to check it, but I'm gonna leave it right now, just glaring and distracting me this episode. But Discord is great. The Lords Limited Discord is excellent. There's a lot of other great perks as you moved up the reward tier rankings. You get access to the show a day early, ad-free. You get access to our show notes. You can see the show in written form. Get access to monthly coaching sessions with me or Ben if you move all the way up the reward tier ranking. So if any or all of that sounds of interest to you, you can head on over to the Patreon page. We want to welcome our new patrons to the fold this week, and we're recording midweek. So we're welcoming the one and only Kyle to the fold. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough. Kyle gets his own shout out. Feels good, man.
Feels good. And I'm going to propose to you, now we're in the second week here, that we're going to title this segment, the JLK What's the Play?
I like it. I saw it in the show notes.
Yeah? You like
it? Nice. Yeah.
Kid tested, mother approved. All right, so this comes from Adrian from the Lords Limited Discord. He was actually one of my opponents in a day one run in the Arena Open, and he sent us a couple keeper mulls here, Ben. So without further ado, let's get into this thing. So you sit down. This is game two. You already know, if you're from Adrian's perspective, you know that your opponent is on some blue-black jank. You've seen a bunch of removal spells game one, a bunch of derpy creatures, the Sanitation Automaton, Bubble Smuggler, Snarling Gorehound, that sort of thing. And you look down and see the following cards in your opener. Plains Mountain, I guess I should say what our deck is. Red White Beats, three shocks, the aforementioned War Leader's Call that is in our opening hand here as well. But just a nice little looking red white beat down aggro deck for sealed. So opening hand is Plains Mountain. Moving up the curve, we have Push Pull. It's a 2-mana removal spell / 6-mana. Double grab something out of the graveyard and gains haste until end of turn and then sacrifice it. War Leader's Call, the Anthem enchantment. There's Make Your Move, the 2 and a white instant, destroy target artifact, enchantment, or creature with power 4 or greater, and two creatures in the hand. One is Gadget Technician, which we can only flip up as a disguise. So 2 blue-red for a 3/2 when ETBs are turn face up, make a 1/1 colorless stop their artifact creature token with flying. Not going to be casting that in a red white deck, but it has disguise for is it hybrid. And then a Harried Dronesmith, 3 and a red, 2/3. At the beginning of combat on your turn, create a 1/1 colorless Thopter artifact creature token with flying. It gains haste until end of turn. Sack it at the beginning of your next end step. On the play, game two, keep or mulligan, Ben?
I don't think you can mulligan this hand, which I feel bad saying because our submitter here did mulligan this hand. But here are my thoughts.
If you
look at the list, we have many of our best cards in hand. So the only way this hand is getting better is if we're guaranteed a third land drop or if we had a 2-drop. But like this kind of a mulligan feels like a constructed mulligan to me, where you don't have the ideal hand, but you're essentially throwing this back hoping to get a similar hand with a 2-drop. And this hand is capable of, yes, we have a red-white beatdown deck, but I don't think you need to get locked into I have to win the game via beating down. Like, this hand is great. Assuming you hit your third land drop, and I don't think in Limited that you can mulligan 2 land hands on the play because you're scared of missing your third land drop. I think you just have to trust and assume you've got 2 shots here to hit a land and 2 draw steps that you're going to hit your third land on time. Then you curve Gadget Technician into War Leader's Call, hopefully into flipping up Gadget Technician plus a push maybe or whatever. But you've also got Harried Dronesmith, which is just excellent with War Leader's Call. That's going to peck in for 2 every turn.
Three
with three the plus ETB. These cards just work so well together. All you need to do is draw your third land and hopefully your fourth land, but really you're in business once you draw your third land here. I don't think you can mulligan this first hand.
The other thing is that there's something sort of nice about like War Leader's Call in hand already, assuming we hit our third land, which I think, as you've said, I think you kind of have to assume, like anytime you're in the like high 60s, which I think you're just slightly less. I'm not checking it immediately, but I'm pretty sure. So this person is running 17 lands. So they have 15 lands left in the deck. So 2 shots at 15 lands, I believe, is 63%, which is just slightly lower than I like. I like to be in the high 60s. Up to 70% range for a lot of these spots. Is that right?
71%.
Oh, it's 71? Oh, yeah. That's you're just keeping that. Like, sure, if you, because you're also not even dead. Like, you have seen from me specifically, like, you're not going to get mowed over from me. Like, and you might just get to pick off some garbage 2-drop with a push if you stumble a little bit. But I agree. I think War Leader's Call in hand really pushes it over the top for me, because it's the kind of card that's going to catch you up so much. If it's your first play, if you're like, all right, I'm gonna hit my third land, play call first, and then the rest of your hand just kind of pops off, plus the top of your library.
Well, and it also too, like, truly looking at the deck, these are all of our best cards, yeah, other than Neighborhood Guardian, like, mm-hmm, in hand. So I think you've got to feel pretty good about that, and you've got to feel like you're keeping. But I think the tempting thing is to tell yourself, Hammer Red White Beatdown deck, I've got to have a two drop. Like, I've got to win the game that way. But I don't think that's true in Sealed.
Yeah. So we're going to go one step further here. I promise we won't linger too much on this, but we're going to go one step further. So Adrian did end up mulliganing, and they mulligan to the following hand, which is Mountain, Shock, Goblin Mask Maker. Those are the castables. The Mask Maker is the one mana 1/2 that makes your disguised creatures cheaper if it attacks. And then three white cards, Neighborhood Guardian, right? One of the best uncommons in the set. Makeshift Binding, the white removal spell. And at the top of the curve, Hazda Vigilante, 4 and a white, 4/4 when ETBs or attacks, you put a ++1 counter on target creature you control with power 2 or less. And I believe that this was the spot Adrian wanted us to talk about, was like, is this hand a keep? And if you're keeping it, what do you put back and why? And I'm gonna zag again, and I'm gonna say, if this is your 6, you gotta go to 5.
You gotta go to 5. It's unfortunate, but like, this is not a game winning hand, because you either have to get rid of Hazda Vigilante or Makeshift Binding, and then you're hoping to rip a white, which you're not favored to do. And even then, like, Goblin Maskmaker plus Neighborhood Guardian is not good enough to win the game. That's what I mean about that other hand. Like, we just had so many good cards in our opener. This one is just not capable of winning a game of Magic with 6 cards. Even if it were red white. I mean, if it red white, you're keeping.
If it red white, it's
and ditching Vigilante, but you're not feeling great about it. I think you got to go to 5 here and try to spike a really good curve with Neighborhood Guardian into a good 3-drop.
Yep, that is what I think as well. So thank you so much to Adrian, and apologies maybe for but I think that's what you're signing up for if you want to be part of the JLK What's the Play segment. And you too can let us know, send us some screenshots, some sweet decisions to review on the show, and we'll maybe get to them. After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch.
So when we heard that Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, we thought, what's the catch?
But after talking to them, it made sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of the retail stores and pass those sweet savings on to you.
We're talking Phyrexian mana cost reduction here.
No, we're talking Modern Horizons 2 Evoke Elemental cost reduction.
All plans come with unlimited talk and text plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network.
Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts.
Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get premium wireless service for just $15 a month.
This is omniscience levels of savings here. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/LOL. That's mintmobile.com/LOL. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/LOL. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigs on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See mintmobile.com for details. All right, Ben, time to break down this article, Nuts and Bolts 16, which we'll have a link to, but we're really going to pour over this. So, you know, for folks who've read this, we'll be trotting over a lot of ground, but I think really interesting to, you know, you and I haven't had a chance to talk about this at all. I said this to you, I was like, we should probably touch on this. And you were like, how much? And then as I was reading over it, I was like, we can probably just do a whole episode on this if we want to.
Yeah, there's a lot here, and I'm excited to dive into it with you. I think the first thing is generally known here. The biggest shift is from common to uncommon. So with draft boosters, we had 101 commons, 80 uncommons. Number of rares and mythic rares is the same from both types of boosters, 60 rares, 20 mythic rares. But they've essentially flip-flopped commons and uncommons when you get to play boosters. So now there are only 81 commons, and there are 100 uncommons. And they've talked about how this is going to influence how they're designing cards, which is super interesting, I think.
Yeah, for sure. So Mark Rosewater outlines that he's going to, for each color, as we'll look over them, he's going to look at the common creature slots, including what they call keyword distribution, which says roughly how many of each keyword will appear at common, which I also think is fascinating. Excited to talk about that. then the common spell slots, so non-creatures, and finally the uncommon numbers for creature and non-creature slots. So a lot of stuff has moved because of this, because there are more uncommon slots. A lot of stuff that we have seen before at common have moved to uncommon. And as a result, the sort of the recipe for commons seems pretty like defined. It seems fairly rigid. Like we might see the same kind of blueprint set to set at common, and then the uncommons is maybe where they're going to be able to cook a little bit.
Well, but I think also in the article, they talked a lot about how this is a skeleton and you can deviate from the skeleton. So I don't think I would not be worried about that too much. I think they're too good at making magic to be falling into a rut like that.
Yeah. Well, and even I don't know if you were doing this as I was reading over the article and seeing those sort of things. I was checking in with, okay, was that true for Murders at Karlov Manor? Because, you know, when we get to black, they talked about how we're probably not going to see any raised dead effects, but we have the whatever the macabre reconstruction in this format. It's like, well, that's at common. And so, you know, it's clearly not as rigid. They'll be doing some stuff as they see fit.
I thought I read somewhere either in the article or in our Discord that this wasn't in effect yet.
Okay. That makes sense.
But I could be wrong about that. I could be making that up completely.
So before we get into the specifics of the color, overall, this was one of the big takeaways, one of the very like bold things was just no room for unplayable commons. There's just not room for them anymore because there's not enough slots. And they define unplayable commons as a card that situationally might be unplayable in a sealed deck. That's just good, right? That's just good for us.
It's just good. Everything about this article was like, yeah, I was on board for basically everything that was in this article, but their idea of playable might be different than our idea of playable. Like if they're saying Defenestrated Phantom is playable in sealed deck or whatever, you know, the 4/3 flying creature, like that's not really playable modern limited.
I tried to check in on like, I just pulled up 17 lands and sorted like one of the old sets commons by like lowest game and hand win rate. Just looking at like, what is an unplayable common from Wilds of Eldraine? And like, you know, we'll get into why a card like this won't exist, but like Break the Spell, single white, destroy target enchantment. If a permanent you controlled or a token was destroyed this way, draw a card. Or Freeze in Place, tap target creature and put 3 stun counters on it, scry 2. Like things that are so mechanically specific or, you know, basically sideboard material, that's gonna just either be relegated to uncommon or just not exist anymore.
Yeah. So in this article, they talk about, you know, trying to get rid of these unplayable commons, and they're doing 3 main things to try to limit the amount of unplayable commons or just get rid of them all together. And the first is just the average power level is going to be higher. So if you're playing a color, most monocolor creatures in that color will at least going to be playable in your deck.
The next point was that moving some effects from common to uncommon, the example they gave was like a threaten effect, Act of Treason, like steal a thing for a turn, it gains haste, return it at the end step. That kind of thing, like you used to do, okay, there's going to be like a steal and sack deck at common because you have this free sack outlet creature. You've got the steal effect. Nope, that's not going to exist at common. Now, what's interesting is they might tack that on somewhere, right? It might be, as we'll get to in this next point, it might be maybe tacked onto a creature or a modal effect.
Right. And the third one is, speaking of modal effects, making use of those. So you're still going to maybe see naturalize or disenchant effects at common, but it's going to be paired with another effect that will make it more useful or more likely that you're going to be able to use one half of the card or the other.
And so the result, one of the major results here is that the sheer number of creatures at common is going up. It seems to be, it's like going up for every color. And then among each colors, it sort of now has maybe a larger share, but because the card file, I believe for each color now is 15 commons, right? That basically it's like, I think blue maybe is the lowest with 8, but it's like 9, 10, 11 creatures at common of those 15. So that's where a lot of those spell effects are going to come in. So you might see whatever the raise dead effect, the active treason effect, the disenchant effect. It's either going to be modal or maybe it's just going to be slapped on as an ETB to a creature.
Yeah. I mean, sign me up. All that sounds good.
Yeah. The other major effect is that average creature size is increasing. And this is especially in white. It's going from the average is 2.95 to 3.28. That really reminds me of the when we were doing Crash Course and like talking about mean, median, mode, just rattling off numbers like this. But so you're getting about a quarter of a power / toughness bump to creatures. And that's to make them more playable, right? So they were talking about how like smaller creatures were like more narrow or sideboard or whatever. And so they're just trying to like bump up the stats so that they're, again, meeting that baseline of playable in a sealed deck.
That was unclear to me, right? Was that referencing actual power and toughness or just the mana value here? Because the other thing that they talked about in this article and that you're seeing is that like they're trying to raise the mana value of the creatures to try to slow down the limited format a little bit. So I thought maybe they were referencing the average power as in like the average mana cost is going to be a little higher. So you're probably getting more bang for your buck at the average mana value.
That's just a wild way to describe creature size was the phrasing used. And if that is not referring to power and toughness, that's weird to me.
I kept trying to scroll over to like see where they were talking about it, and then I was like, maybe this is just mana value.
Yeah, that makes sense to the fact that it wasn't like because what's this 2 point? It's one number, 2.95 to 3.28. Yeah, that does make sense that it's maybe mana value. Well, that's a bummer. I just wanted stuff to be bigger.
kill your opponents dead faster.
Yeah, but this, yeah, right. But this is more a product of them sort of bumping up, as we'll get to in some colors, just bumping up the slots that they needed. Like sometimes it was like, we have to have a one drop in blue, and now that's not the case anymore.
Right. And the last thing is they're going to be shifting away from sideways build arounds, which is more of those designs going to be done at rare, since the rares show up more frequently now. But I assume this is like your true build arounds, like your
chalk outlines,
as it were, your chalk outlines of the world. That's what I understood sideways build arounds to be.
So if this were, it's interesting because like those aren't quite sideways build arounds, right? Because that's what black green is doing ostensibly in the format. So maybe that doesn't feel like quite a, maybe that still gets a pass under the realm of this article. But yeah, I we've seen this in the past, and it's like, you know, going back to original Throne of Eldraine, it's one of the reasons we like that format so much is there's so many cool build around rares in that set, like Dance of the Mance and Doom Foretold and stuff. So if we're going to see more of that kind of effect, like those sort of like, you know, 1 in 20 drafts, you're like, oh, I pack one, pick one, this I get to try to do the thing, I'm here for that for sure.
But I already feel that from MKM. Like, this has been such a breath of fresh air as far of like feeling like I'm incentivized to do a variety of things that can still win while I'm drafting.
Yeah.
Cereal is one of the best parts of being a kid. Grabbing a big bowl, filling it to the brim, and plopping down on the couch for a morning of cartoons.
Free Saturday mornings and a bunch of cartoons aren't really on the menu anymore, and neither was cereal for me until I found out about Magic Spoon. Magic Spoon makes delicious cereal with all flavors you love, but higher in protein and way less sugar.
The variety pack comes with 4 flavors: cocoa, fruit, frosted, and peanut butter. This pack has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, 4 to 5 grams of net carbs, and only 140 calories per serving.
Magic Spoon slots into a ton of different parts of my day. Could be a quick, wholesome breakfast, an afternoon snack when I need some extra fuel, or a nice way to end the day to satisfy my sweet tooth without all the sugar.
Go to magicspoon.com/LOL to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code LOL at checkout to save $5 off your order.
And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked.
Remember, start the new year off right with a delicious bowl of high-protein cereal at magicspoon.com/LOL and use the code LOL to save $5 off. Thanks to Magic Spoon for sponsoring this episode.
All right, let's get into the specifics of the color. So for white, still number one in the number of creatures, even though it's gone down one creature slot. This is sort of the case for all the colors. Like, there's less creatures by number, but it represents more of the pie of the 15 total common slots. So there's 11 creatures of the 15 in white. So it's down from 12 to 11, but that's just sort of, I don't know, pedantic. The keyword distribution stuff, I think, is fascinating. What's going on there?
So in white, they're going to have 3 flying creatures, 2 with vigilance, 1 with lifelink, a quarter, 0.25 with first strike, and 0.20 with double strike, and there was a note about first strike having fallen out of favor with R&D since it leads to ground board stalls, which is why they tend to try to make it only work offensively rather than defensively. Like when this creature attacks, it has first strike or whatever.
I thought that was a really cool peel back the curtain. It is interesting. Like a lot of this seems to be, they're not interested in board stalls. Not even a little bit, not even on Wednesdays, not even once a year. Like they're just not interested in like high toughness creatures. They're not interested in people blocking with first strike, like just no long games.
Rest in peace, Suncrested Pterodon.
Yeah,
it's deep right there. Four and a white, 2/5 flying vigilance from Rivals of Ixalan.
Yeah, man, was that was a card for sure. So I thought that was really interesting. That keyword distribution checks out, right? That seems pretty on brand to what we've expected from white. And then the non-creature slots, they get really specific. You have a really clear idea of what kinds of things, again, it's a skeleton, but what kinds of things they're looking for. So for white, the four non-creature slots were a combat-related removal spell, so whatever, deal X damage to target attacking or blocking creature, a banishing light effect, right, that we're seeing here with makeshift binding and MKM, a combat trick, and then a disenchant slash removal spell. So whether that's a modal spell, maybe that's, it could be a disenchant, it could be an additional removal spell. And the big thing that I thought was interesting here was that Banishing Light was the thing at common now that we're going to see. And they say pacifism effects are just being replaced by Banishing Light style effects. Power creep is real, Ben.
I mean, you love to see it. That's all good news, I think.
Yeah. And I think that because of, and it's not that much more, but right, rares and mythics, as it should be stated, right? When play boosters are restated from when we chatted about play boosters initially, play boosters will have more rares on average, right? They could have up to 4 rares, but really the average is 1.4 rares or mythics per pack. And so that is a pretty significant increase, right? Almost a 50% increase. That rares and mythics being present is very prevalent in the design space here. And you can see that here with them going away from pacifism effects. Mark said, effects that neutralize a creature without killing it need to have more, quote, text wiping because many rares have powerful non-combat abilities. So it's not good enough just to make a thing not be able to attack or block anymore.
But I like that they're giving thought and giving voice to, yeah, we need people to be able to answer these more rares as an effect of moving to play boosters. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And I think this change, certainly the reduction in the number of non-creature spells, it forces certain kinds of effects onto creatures is the other thing they were talking about. So maybe there's not room for, you know, on the job anymore, for example, as a standalone spell. And maybe we're going to more frequently see a 4-mana or a 5-mana 3/3 that gives +1/+1 to your team on ETB. So the idea that they're going to maybe some of the more niche or more situational effects that we previously saw as standalone commons, now that there are just literally less commons, we might see some of those kinds of effects stapled onto creatures, which is also cool. And I think generally more powerful, and we're in for more power at common as limited players.
Moving on to blue, the creature percentage here increases as well, and notably no longer a default one drop in blue, right? There can be, but doesn't have to be. And it has the potential for multiple 6 drops. What do you think's going on there? We got like the mana cyclers we've seen. Maybe that's going to be a spot for these more expensive creatures. We've seen in the past, like the big dumb, you know, serpent that can get unblockable in some clunky fashion. Is this good for blue?
I mean, I'm a sucker for an unblockable serpent, so it's great news for me. Also love a Lorien revealed. So I'm in. Those are the kinds of 6 drops we're getting in blue. But I think one of the overarching takeaways that was pretty clear through reading the article to me was that, you know, they were, if you look at draft booster skeleton compared to play booster skeleton, there was a concerted effort to raise the mana value of things. And they talked about a concerted effort to maybe try to slow limited down a little bit.
Well, I bet there's a balance there of, look, we recognize that now we have to, there's nothing clunky that we're allowed to do at common, really, right? It's all got to be playable and sealed. And I feel like this is a way to check, put them in check of like, okay, some stuff is going to be more expensive because if everything is playable and everything is like on rate, how is not every single format blisteringly fast?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think they're giving some voice to that, which is good. So if we look at the blue keyword distribution, Again, you've got three flyers, 1.5 on average with vigilance, and then half for ward, half for defender, half for flash.
Half for defender? Pour one out. Pour one out for the butts decks. Mark said a year ago we made a big change to add vigilance to blue. It's now the second most used keyword, mainly because making blue creatures want to attack can be difficult, which is, again, really interesting, like them recognizing, wrestling with this idea of how do we make blue be able to tussle. And honestly, if MKM wasn't part of this discussion or article or whatever, then it's maybe just happenstance or a little trickling into this new design philosophy. But like Jaded Analyst, like 3/2, like I thought that card was like bad Boat Piranhas because it was a 3/2. Well, the fact that actually you can attack with it as a 3/2 vigilance, it is a really big deal.
Yeah, that card does work. It's come around to me too in blue green Clue Beatdown. It's a really, really good card there. Like the blue green tempo decks.
Yeah, but like, yeah, Eavesdropper makes a clue and then you crack it pre combat. So Eavesdropper has vigilance, Analyst can attack.
You just never don't have clues in blue green.
That's true. Certainly not. And the other note here is about being more cautious with toughness statted creatures, as again, a fear of board stall games, not wanting those games to stall out. So, like I said, maybe long gone are the days of one on a blue 0/5 defender, you know?
For sure. And that takes us on to our non-creature slots in blue, which has 7 at common. I think that is the most of any of the colors, right?
Yes.
And so the kind of slots they had carved out were a protective instant, a counterspell, a cantrip, a draw spell of either 2 or 3 cards, a witness protection type aura that removes all of the abilities from a creature and turns it into a 1/1, that sort of thing. A top or bottom bounce spell, like that actually puts it on the library rather than just bouncing it to hand, and some sort of a more modal spell.
Yeah, so the things that they were really trying to hammer home, or that Mark was trying to hammer home in this article, was that, again, blue needs answers for cards. And so we're probably not going to see dramatic accusations, claustrophobia variants moving forward. There isn't a slot for that here. We might see something a little more juiced at uncommon, perhaps, or a little more synergistic with a set's mechanic at uncommon. But at common, they want the color to be able to answer these bombs either by put it on top or bottom of your library, or the Kazmina's Transmutation, the witness protection style auras. Do I need to get on board with these as real removal? Do we need to? No.
No. No,
but R&D is telling us that it's real removal.
No, and dramatic accusation kind of lines up with this philosophy, right? Because you can shuffle the thing away into the deck. Like, it gives blue a way to get it off the battlefield.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah, nothing else really stood out to me. That was sort of surprising to me that, like, the witness protection aura was here to stay.
Good news for our win rates, because other people will be playing them.
In every set. Well, and I think it'll probably be the new pacifism conversation for us. Like, which sets is it good in will be a fun puzzle to solve, because they won't always be terrible, right? They will certainly sometimes have, if there's an enchantment theme, maybe it gets a bump, or if it's tied into a set's mechanic in some way, etc.
I mean, but even the one in MKM that can, like, give your detective +2/+2 or turn their thing into a 1/1, like, that card's not even great.
That card's no. Good. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. It does so much. Have you ever read to the end of that card?
Probably.
Do you know that it says they can put it on your thing and then it can't block detectives?
No, I had no idea the text was on there.
There we go. That's what I thought. All right. moving on to black. The keyword distribution here is 2 creatures with flying, 1.5 with menace, 1.25 with death touch, and 1 with lifelink. And then some rules about that were black's common flyers will be less good than white or blue's. So no Dunland Crabane from LTR, I guess, as one of the top commons there. Menace has been creeping up as it plays so well. He said this multiple times.
I don't feel like it does. I've hated largely all of black's creatures with menace recently, it does. I feel like.
Excuse me, first of all, I need you to apologize right now to Snarling Gorehound.
Snarling Gorehound, yeah. Okay.
Okay. Oh, I guess, and that's, I hadn't even thought about that when I was reading this, of like, look, they made Menace a whole mechanic in this format with Suspect, you know, like,
yep.
like clearly like Menace a lot. Well, I think it definitely ties into no board stalls, right? Like you're so incentivized to attack and often not incentivized to block creatures with Menace because double blocking is bad, etc. So Menace
is... Give me 3-powered Menace creatures and then I'm interested. The Menace creatures yeah. always have 2 power and they're just like really bad flyers.
Yes. Yeah. And I need 3-mana, 3/2 Menace is where it's at. Death Touch is usually going to be on a smaller creature, right? Like a 1 or a 2 drop. And then Lifelink is usually on a bigger creature, bigger than, you know, white also has a dedicated Lifelink creature. But that's usually, I think, as we've seen, often going to be like a 2-mana 2/2 in white with Lifelink. And then black sometimes gets that like 5-mana 4/3 or whatever.
Yeah, but this is, I mean, for all of these colors, just kind of a cool look into what they perceive to be the color pie and how that ties into their limited design philosophy.
Yeah. And so then what's going on with the non-creature slots?
We've got 6 here. And again, they're carved out similar to blues for certain types of things. First is a small conditional removal spell, a combat trick, some sort of a card draw card that has an added cost, usually paying life, a discard spell. And they were talking about that discard spell being a Corsion effect as opposed to just, you know, a Ravenous Rat style discard or even Mind Rot. Yeah. yeah. But that they wanted black to have a way to nab rares out of people's hands before they hit the battlefield.
Yeah.
And we have seen those types of cards being good lately, and hopefully we'll continue to see those being good.
Mm-hmm.
Some sort of an unconditional removal spell and then slightly overcosted removal.
I love how like
rip that card.
Right. Like all of these things are like, we got to make everything super playable. Got to like make sure everything's good on rate. Got to make sure we have a slightly overcosted black removal spell. So yeah, 3 removal spells, the combat trick, the card draw spell, the discard spell. And then as we alluded to earlier, effects that don't have a space on a spell at common, like a Raise Dead effect, yeah. can either be made at uncommon or can be added to creature spells as an effect. Gravediggers. We're going to get Gravediggers at common now.
That would be nice.
Does it feel weird to you that like we're talking about them still as commons or uncommons? Because I guess they are the frequency of them is still they are literally more common than the uncommons. But it's just hard for me to wrap my head around that with there are just truly less of them, less of the individual numbers of them. Overall.
Less of the individual numbers of commons?
Yeah, right? 80 versus 100.
I've really liked there being more uncommons. It just adds more just
makes
variety.
The drafts feel, yeah, makes the drafts feel
just makes the
different.
Drafts stay fresh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've liked it.
I'm in for it too.
All right. It takes us on to red, which is having the second largest increase of creature percentage at common. So white being the first. And the biggest change is there's no longer a guaranteed 1-drop slot, but does have a guaranteed 6-drop slot.
Hello. That's really interesting. I would have thought, and again, I think this is them maybe wrestling with not wanting the formats to feel so fast. So let's not make every color have to have a 1-drop, which I think is a good, like 2023 definitely felt like the year of the 1-drop in limited.
Yeah. I mean, almost every format had every color having a 1-drop that was quite good or quite pushed.
Yeah. And so looks like we're pumping the brakes on that, which I am here for. The keyword distribution is spread 1.5 trample, 1.5 menace, 1.5 haste, 1 reach. So we've
got reach is here to stay.
Speaking of secret reach, it didn't end up mattering. Got by Gearbane Orangutan.
Oh no.
In the Arena Open. And I was streaming the other day and like trying to figure out if I needed to like move an equipment with my Gear Drakes. Bunch of people in chat being like, no, you have lethal, you're fine, you're good. And I was like, how do I have lethal? Gearbane Orangutan has reach number 37. And then everybody was like, oh, okay, sorry. So yeah, 1 creature has reach. And then again, the 1.25 first strike, 0.20 double strike. The dedicated slot for reach, I'm here for. The 50 takes episode is secured. I assume that's what that's for.
Yeah, absolutely. They obviously listen to our show and want it to keep going strong. So they're giving us a slot for the 50 takes. They know how hard it is to get to those 50 takes.
Just creeping, just limping to the finish line there. And then how about the non-creature slots?
We got 6 of those, again, outlined as direct damage, which deals 2, like a shock effect, some sort of a combat trick, some sort of a rummaging or a discard a card, draw a card type effect. a modal shatter, a direct damage, which is efficient, usually deals 4, and then a 5 mana deals 6 damage. And one of the notes they had here was that red's common removal usually topped out at 5 damage, but they're upping it to 6 because of those rare and mythic sphinxes running around that are, you know, 6-6 flyers or what have you.
Yeah, okay. And yeah, now has it is a dedicated, as they said, card flow slot. So either, as Ben said, a rummager or like Reckless Impulse. So like, you know, exile top 2 cards of your library until your next turn you can play them. So red's getting that dedicated slot for some sort of either card filtering or just card, you know, quote unquote draw.
That takes us on to green, where we have the following keyword distribution: 1.5 vigilance, 1.5 trample, 1.5 reach, 1 death touch, 0.5 ward, and 0.2 haste. So we've got reach and death touch guaranteed now for green.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. And then the non-creature slots is 5. So green had a big increase in creatures as well. Like them, I think I'm most hopeful, honestly, for green. And I feel like we're kind of seeing it in MKM. I think the shift of this philosophy to no unplayables at common is going to reignite our love for green in limited. I think no longer will green be relegated to last place. Like, I think a lot of the things being tacked onto creatures here are just green having a higher creature count and not just like a ton of random mana fixing whatever stuff or situational plummet variants, I think, is really going to be good. So looking at the non-creature slots, there's only 5. They're going to get a fight spell and a bite spell. So that's not one or the other, but both. A combat trick, a mana accelerator of some sort, and a dig for lands / creatures. So, you know, one of those cards, it's like 2 and a green, look at the top 4. You can grab a creature and or land from among them type of deal.
Yeah, and I think one of the other things that was really cool about green, or one of the things that stuck out the most, was they were talking about how, because play boosters are going to have more rares and mythics, they really wanted to limit how easily they gave green access to fixing, because they didn't want formats to devolve into always green is 5 color soup or whatever, splash all the bomb mythics rares, because there are more bomb mythics and rares running around. So they were going to do that twofold. One, they were going to kind of make it harder for green to just search up lands. Like maybe it would be look at the top 6, kind of like the O2 Defender card we saw in DMU.
Yeah.
Like maybe that type of searching up of lands. Or they were also going to try to change the casting cost of rares and mythics so that they weren't as easily splashable. So maybe like Tolsimir, for example, from MKM is, rather than green, green, white, it's white, white, green.
Right.
So it's just a little bit harder for green decks to splash.
Yeah. No, I really like that. I think that's good. Like, I think unless we're in a sort of, I mean, I don't even know if we're going to see that anymore now, but I think it not being easy to splash bombs from both sides of like them not being single pipped and you just not getting whatever mana fixing you want whenever, because there's so much of it, it feeling more special or more unique, or like you have to fight for it or make sacrifices in your pick ward or whatever to get access to it. I think that makes for a much more interesting draft format.
Yes, absolutely.
So those are the 5 colors. Looking at multicolor, just one thing they said was one of the biggest changes, and this is just sort of in the makeup, the number of things, from draft boosters to play boosters, was the decision to increase from 1 multicolor card per 2 color combination to 2. So the idea here is one will be an enabler, helping make the archetype work. The other will be a strong payoff for doing what the archetype is telling you to do. In the draft booster world, we'd have to choose which of these 2 functions the gold signpost had. In the play booster world, we have space to do both. This is where 10, half of the 20 new cards in Uncommon are going. I love this.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm a huge fan of there being one, there being, because it used to just be like, this is the creature that does the thing. And now it seems like they're going to, maybe one's a little stronger, one's a little more niche. One's like, hey, you just play this when you're in the 2 color pair. And the other one is like, hey, if you're really doing the thing, this card's going to be good for you. Maybe you see it late. Maybe it wheels. Like, there's just so much more. I mean, we see it in this format, right? Like getting the, like getting the satchels pulls you into blue red, and then no one else, no one's splashing Gear Drake, or they shouldn't be. And so maybe you get those a little later in pack two or pack three.
Well, and you saw it even in your day two Arena Open draft. Like, I mean, Chalk Outline is not a gold card, but like, it's essentially right. a green black gold card. I was just thinking, can't, like, after you'd firmly committed to green black, I was just thinking, can we get a Chalk Outline? And I was like, fist pumped when you saw it.
Yeah.
Pack three, pick seven. It's just a good feeling to have that type of thing be possible while you're drafting. And the other reason this is a great change, and one of the things they alluded to when they were talking about rares and mythics also, and not wanting them to be so splashable, was that they wanted the archetypes to feel more synergistically powerful.
Yes.
So that again, they were trying to incentivize you to draft archetypes and not just draft decks. Okay, now that there's more rares and mythics, I'm just going to try to jam as many rares and mythics in my deck as possible. And I think we do see that in MKM. I feel better playing a streamlined two-color deck than I do a deck full of, you know, I mean, that, I guess that's here or there. Yeah, depends on what the rares are. I mean, sign me up for an Izonian Doppelgang, I guess, so...
Yeah,
I don't want to be.
No, but you're right. I mean, that's what we've been saying for weeks now, is like, you either should be able to get something that's super powerful and like hold on to it and carve that out, or you should find an open two color pair. And any of the open two color pairs feels good. That's another thing that, like, I think it is part of the play booster, you know, for all the naysayers out there leading up to it. I think MKM, for my money, has been a great set, and play boosters, I think, are lending. I can't tell if it's just a flash in the pan of everything's viable. All the colors feel like, yeah, there's a gap. There's a clear best, a clear worst, I think, but they're all playable. All the color pairs are playable. I'm happy mucking around with blue, black, or black, red, if it's open, you know, and that has not been the case. Like, I can't tell you the last set that was the case for. It definitely didn't exist last year, and probably not the year before.
DMU for sure.
Sir, please don't talk about that format. DMU for sure. I guess I was the only person drafting black white in that format.
I love black white in that format. Love black white in that format.
So we talked about how we're getting a bit of 50 takes love. We're also getting a bit of 50 takes love in the artifacts here, where they upped the power level of artifacts at common, and they have a dedicated spot for what they are naming a variance buster, which is just some two mana smoother. It's the golden egg.
Yeah, it's okay, R&D. You can call it the golden egg. We give you our blessing to just call this the golden egg.
Yeah, so and we've seen this, and it now sounds like we're going to just be able to clearly have one per set if they're giving this to colorless, but whatever. So the two, like a 2-mana, 2/1, search up a land and put it on top of your library. We've seen that before. Like Sanitation Automaton, 2-mana, 2/1, ETB Surveil 1, like one of those cards is gonna exist in every set, or there is a dedicated spot for it in this skeleton.
Yeah, it's a great thing. And then if we look at the non-creature spells, there are three of those. One sort of clunky, expensive removal, a Manalith plus type ability where you're fixing with your colorless artifact, and then some sort of land fixing type thing.
As someone who often, certainly in week 5 or 6, finds themselves with no removal at the end of the draft, knowing that there's that colorless clunky removal spell, that whatever 6-mana flash, deal 5 damage with cycling 2, whatever, like one of those kind of things, that's got a home in my deck in week 5 or week 6.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's kind of a wrap up here from this article. So it talked about the uncommons being a big focus point for play boosters, and that they've added 20 cards to uncommon. So I don't know if we specifically said this earlier, but 5 of those went to mono colors, right? So one for each color got a new uncommon. 10 of them went to multicolor. That's where they're giving the double signposts per color pair. And then 5 went to either colorless artifacts or lands, and this is where they're going to put cards that have synergy with the large set themes, so allowing all of the colors to have access to more synergy and more powerful things going on that, again, are going to try to steer you away from just decks full of bomb rares.
And then they ended the article with just some additional tips for them to keep in mind. They want each two-color draft archetype to have at least 6 support cards. So maybe this is like a chalk outline-y thing, right? So two monocolor commons and two monocolor uncommons, usually one in each color, and then the two multicolor cards, as they talked about. So two signposts per card, but then two sort of we in the common parlance, we call them secret gold cards. Yes. Right. So like, and that's what they're referring to here is like commons that are they happen to or commons or uncommons that happen to be monocolor, but actually are best or only belong in one spot.
Right. And with all the extra rares and mythic rares running around, this is, again, a point we talked about earlier, but just to hammer it home, the synergy of the draft themes is more important than ever. We really want to encourage you to play with the themes rather than just a smattering of bombs. Like, all of these summaries, like, I was just like, yes, 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 yes. Felt great about all these points they were making.
It makes me feel good about when I'm just like, look, trust R&D. Like, this article, I was like, that. I mean, clearly the game's been going on for over 30 years, like, they're doing something right, and they're doing a lot right by us limited players, I think. This point I thought was really interesting. We want to make sure there's enough graveyard hate such that rare and mythic rare threats aren't continually coming back. So we're seeing twofold of just maybe just incidental random graveyard hate for that, and removing the standardized raise dead, whatever, grab two things out of the yard, put them into your hand effects at common. So either that's going to get tacked onto creatures or moved on to uncommon. So you'll see it less.
Yep. And lastly, rares and mythic rares want to be more liberal in their use of extra colored pips to make them harder to splash.
Yeah. We've alluded to this. So that was a lot to bite off, a lot of like our not usual fare. So maybe we've talked about enough, touched on enough. Can we chat about this draft log from my second draft at the Arena Open?
Please.
Okay. So we'll sort of fast forward, shortcut a couple things. So pack one, pick one. You're thrilled / not thrilled to open.
Yeah, this is a double-edged sword. I mean, you have to take Aurelia.
Yeah.
But you're also wondering, like, do I get to draft red-white? But at least, like, you're going to give it the old college try. And Aurelia is splashable, certainly.
Yeah, and you're passing also quite a lot. Not that it matters, but you're passing a Fuss Bother. You're passing a Makeshift Binding. I mean, Makeshift Binding is the next best card in the pack, right?
Fuss Bother is really good, too. They're close.
Yeah, they're close. I personally would take Binding ahead of Fuss Bother, but maybe that's wrong. So we take Aurelia, and then you're just thrilled, beyond thrilled, to see Dogwalker pick two.
Are you? I would not want my draft to start out this way.
How would you want your draft to start out?
I want my Arena Open draft to start with, like, I don't know, Izoni into Nervous Gardener. Like, I feel way better about not getting randomly cut with that kind of a start.
I guess the reason I was feeling good about, like, Dogwalker specifically in spot, well, one, it feels like the thing we were talking about last week with my Perimeter Enforcer pack one, pick one, like, this is the clear pick. Like, this is
yes.
The clear best card in the pack, no matter what, and matches up great with my first pick. So that's why I feel thrilled about it. But also, it's flexible, right? I can go. I'm already, as you're alluding to, right? There's some fear in pack one, pick one, Aurelia, because you're like, am I going to get pushed off it? Red white's the best deck. Am I going to be able to do this? I'm already thinking, okay, maybe I can go white X, splash Aurelia, red X, splash Aurelia, and Dogwalker slots into all of those plans nicely.
Yeah, I think if you're going to follow up with Aurelia with a red-white card, you want it to be Dogwalker.
Yeah. And then pick three is the pick to unpack here, or one of many to unpack. So there's no white card, no pure white card in the pack. The only card that touches white is Sanguine Savior, the one white-black, 2/1 flying lifelink with disguise. The only red card in the pack is Felonious Rage. Single red, instant, target creature you control gets +2/+0 and gains haste until end of turn. When that creature dies, you create a 2/2 white and blue detective creature token. And then the best card in the pack, ? Is what?
I don't care. I mean, it's nothing's good enough to matter as being the best card.
So that is, like, I've been thinking about this pick since this draft a lot, because I think this is a very interesting pick, because there's one of two ways to look at this pick is that there's so many contextual cards, and to shout a few out, there's Tunnel Tipster, the green mana dork, there's Snarling Gorehound, the single black 1/1 menace, whenever a creature with power 2 or less ETBs, you surveil one. There's Hedge Maze, the green blue surveil land, like, but none of those cards are like pulling me anywhere. And so there's one of two ways to look at this is like, nothing's pulling me in a direction. So like, just take Felonious Rage, just take Sanguine Savior and hold on to these two because nothing is pulling you in a spot. But the other thing is like, I'm already scared. And so should I take something else and start to leave an avenue open? And if so, what should that avenue be?
Yeah, I think it's different because your first two cards are red-white. Like if your first two cards are Balu-Black or whatever, sure, I'm fine shoring it up with whatever mediocre card. But I'm so cognizant of I might have to pivot off this and I need to be prepared to have an exit plan. And what should that plan be? And I think the card that lets you, like, you're not going to miss Sanguine Savior or Felonious Rage if red-white is open. You will miss Tunnel Tipster if you're supposed to be green and Tunnel Tipster plays well with Dogwalker. I like Tunnel Tipster as the pick here.
That is what I took. The other thing I was thinking is like the most likely way for me to still get to play Aurelia / Dogwalker in this scenario is if I go green red or green white and then splash the other one. And so that's why I did end up taking the Tunnel Tipster here. But I think you could make an argument for taking Felonious Rage or Sanguine Savior here. And the argument is that, yes, red white is going to be contested. Like that's what I'm already sensing here a little bit. But like red white is also so deep that you could just like take Felonious Rage. Like you're gonna get playables and you've already got such a strong start that like, I don't know. I think this is, I'm not convinced that I made the right choice here.
Well, so here's the choices I see it that you're making. If you're taking either Felonious Rage or Sanguine Savior, you're signing up to just like force red white.
Yes.
From this point. And I think you're too good of a drafter to do that. Like I personally would not want to. I feel like I have an edge.
Yeah.
In any given draft over the majority of people that are sitting at my pod. And I would not want to, like, Aurelia is not that nuts, like that you feel like especially, you need to hold on for dear life. Like,
yeah,
certainly in a color pair where you're expecting to get cut. I don't know. I just wouldn't want to give up my agency that easily. You're likely to wheel one of those two cards, I think, out of this pack.
If you're supposed to be in that color pair.
Right. And what it does, picking one of those two cards does give you the ability to force red white. That's not something I'm interested in doing personally. Like,
yeah. Well, especially like if this is a different format, I am interested in that. Like if this is a format where I'm like, I want to be red, white, red, blue, or blue, white, then yeah, I am probably going to force. But this is not like I was just talking about. I'm happy drafting any of the 10 color pairs. If that's an open color pair. And I know red-white is likely to be the least open color pair, depending on what happens at the table, especially in draft two of day two of the Arena Open.
So, like the other way to frame it, like kind of in my mind, if you're not willing to jump ship off red-white for Tunnel Tipster over Sanguine Savior or Felonious Rage, like when are you moving off of red-white for what? Like this seems like the perfect type of pick to hedge, like. Certainly, if the next pack has a great red or a white card, you're fine to move the Tunnel Tipster into your sideboard instantly. But otherwise, like, I mean, if your next pick has a Loxodon Eavesdropper versus like a Seasoned Consultant, then you feel priced into taking the Seasoned Consultant. Like, that's not the life I want to be living when I draft this format personally. Yeah. I do not think red-white is that good that I want to try to hold on that hard. Am I going to hedge my picks towards trying to play Dogwalker and Aurelia? Absolutely, but not this hard, not this early in the draft.
Yeah. Yep. And that is what I landed on. I think that pick is the pick for the draft. Like if you don't take Tunnel Tipster, you're forcing. And if you do, you take my path, I think, which is pick four. Again, like only white card is Crovod Haunch, which is like fine, but not exciting, in my opinion. There are some red cards. I think the best option for red-white would be a Fender at Large, the 4 and a red, 5/4. When it ETBs or is turned face up, another creature or a creature gets +2/+0 until end of turn. But there's a smattering of green cards. Chief among them, I think, is Nervous Gardener, the one in a green 2/2. With the skies green when it's turned face up, you can search your library for a basic land type, reveal it, put in your hand, and then shuffle. And lines up great with Tunnel Tipster and lines up great with my idea right now, which is Let's go green, red, or green, white, and splash Aurelia.
Yeah, that makes total sense to me. I love the Nervous Gardener pick here to follow up Tunnel Tipster.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. Like, I've gone back over these picks being like, could I have? You really can't force red, white. You're really sad. Like, yeah, you get some stuff, as you would expect, in the beginning of pack two because it's cut so hard. But it's really hard to, like, be anything other than very nauseous as you're doing this in pack one.
Yeah, I think so. And if you look at your next pick, I do think you can make a different pick here. Like, I think I might have. I messaged you that I would only make one pick differently than you, which was pack two, pick one. I think I would make this pick differently also. I think I would take Hosta Vigilante here, pack one, pick five, over Aftermath Analyst. Woo, we just got the sit bolt upright. Lean back in the chair in shock and awe at that statement. So Ethan selected Aftermath Analyst here, the 1/3 mill three cards, and you can sack it to return all the lands from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. To me, that's more of a green black gold card than it is.
Uh-huh. I agree.
Anything else? And I think Hosta Vigilante looks great with the type of cards you have right now. It's good with Tipster. It's good with both your morphs. Lets you potentially be green white. It's good to ramp into with a Tunnel Tipster.
It's just complete filler in my mind versus Analyst, which is like. Yeah, you're right. Like, I'm not taking Analyst here, and I'm not like, oh, sick. This will be so good in my green, red, splash, white deck. But at this point, I am feeling like this is like the world is cut, and I've got now three really good green cards, and Analyst is an ace in like green, black, or green, blue.
Well, so we talked about like in our day one or our draft one drafts in the Arena Open. Like, to me, I know if I take Aftermath Analyst here, it's likely that Aurelia is not going to end up in my main deck. Like, that's going to steer me towards a space where I'm more willing to pivot off. And I think I do like Aurelia and Dogwalker enough that I'm willing to give up some amount of power here to try to stay on the green-white life splash Aurelia.
Yeah, that I think that's a fair philosophy. And maybe my feeling of Hosta Vigilante has gone down quite a bit. Like, I think it was one of our, like, let's chat about this week one. Like, wow, what an overperformer. Like, I think I maybe even had thoughts of, like, this might get the Imperial Oath Award for, like, clunky-looking overperformer. I think with just how insane On the Job is, and it's not fair to compare this to On the Job, but they, like, there are so many cards that occupy this space of, like, pumping up your small creatures, and Hosta Vigilante, I think, is firmly at the bottom of that rung, or at the bottom rung of that ladder. That, yeah, I prefer the upside of Analyst. But I hear everything you're saying. It definitely is, like, by taking this, I am basically saying Aurelia is going to be in the sideboard unless my mana ends, unless I'm like just pure five color soup.
Well, and not that it has to be. Again, you could be in an Aftermath Analyst if you start seeing white cards, but you don't.
Yeah. I really, really don't. Yeah. And then get a pick seven Insidious Roots and kind of go down that route. And the other pick Ben was chatting about was pack two, pick one. I took a Detective Satchel. It's just, this is powerful and I'm going to be green, splash around. Didn't end up making the cut. Didn't get the mana for it. And probably could have anticipated that. That was the one pick at the end of the draft that I was like, I kind of regret that decision. But
right. But there's a world where if you take Eavesdropper pack two, pick one, then all of a sudden you feel way better about taking Inside Source. Like, there's a way you bully your way into green-white.
Yep.
Splash Aurelia. I think if you make a different pack, two pick one.
Yep. That's definitely true. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Have the option to take whatever white cards I see in pack two before getting cut out of it again in pack three. Draft is so interesting, man. It's the best. Like,
it really is the best.
Do we have to play any games? Can we just draft?
I don't feel necessary to play games. I really enjoyed the draft play one round. When we were in Chicago.
Yeah, just get those maximum drafts in.
For a sure. Draft density.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Any parting thoughts about the old play boosters before we go?
I'm here for it. I'm really excited to see what this year of Limited is like. And moving forward, but like this, you know, this is our first year of seeing play boosters. And if MKM was like sort of before this philosophy I was outlined, or only half of this philosophy outlined, or the skeleton outlined, I think MKM is great. And I think this, like, all, as you said, all of these things, like, check, and I'm excited to see them in action. Slash, maybe now that I've seen how the sausage is made, I'm gonna be like, well, this is clearly card file C white 15 common, like, this is that and whatever. But I don't think that's gonna be the case.
I just don't think they talked in the article too about how they have flexibility, yeah. right? This is just a blueprint and they feel fine deviating from the blueprint. But I did think one of the other really encouraging takeaways for me was that they very much acknowledge that they're trying to slow limited down a little bit. And I think that is for the better in my mind.
And design, like, and recognizing that an increase to from 1 to 1.4 rares average per pack, we got to make a lot of concessions or changes with that in mind.
Well, and certainly if that pushes them towards more synergy, as they were outlining in the article, mm-hmm. I know I'm going to enjoy that because that's why I like draft. I like the feeling of, yeah, I combined these 7 cards together and they did their thing and I got this awesome burst of dopamine from, like, look at this cool thing that I
spun my wheels. I went 1 and 3 and it felt great.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. On that note, thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our great content at lordsoflimited.com. Links to our tier lists, our episode backlogs, our merch courtesy of TeePublic, our Patreon page, our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams, all that good stuff at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, or maybe you want to submit your own JLK What's the Play, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.
Why settle for ordinary when you could have extraordinary? Why trade off when you could trade up? Why chase your dreams when you could drive them? Find your dream car with L-Certified by Lexus, with an unlimited mileage warranty for up to 6 years and a complimentary maintenance plan. Experience amazing exclusively at your Lexus dealer. Click the banner to discover more.
Call 800-USA-LEXUS or see your participating dealer for warranty, maintenance, and offer details.
Find your perfect fit with a custom suit from Indochino. From timeless classics to bold statements, you can express your style exactly how you want. Get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more at indochino.com with code PODCAST.